Welcome to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. What we're going to talk about today is a problem that we as marketers have all the time, and that is the spam and the promotion. I actually hated it when Google implemented these two folders. I'm just kind of curious what your opinion is on them.
Well, you know, what's funny is when I knew we were having this conversation, I started thinking about it, and I actually don't think I've ever looked in my... I always look at my spam folder because sometimes you'll say you sent me something and I don't believe you. So I do check the spam folder every once in a while. But
why would I lie to you?
I don't know. But I never, I'm actually looking right now. I don't even know. Okay, I just found the promotions folder in my Gmail and I have 6,500 emails in there. So I'm reaching chew level.
Oh, interesting. So yeah. You didn't count the unopens.
It took me a second to find it. And I'm looking at it right now. It's like all stores and stuff. It's actually all stores. It's, you know, Banana Republic, Kate Spade, the Container Store.
Croc Store. Yeah.
The Croc Store. Yeah. Walmart. But Amy Porterfield is sitting in here. Marie Forleo is in here.
Let's see who else. My wife put her job in there.
I'm actually looking. Ahrefs is in there. Their weekly email.
So I actually canceled my promotions. Like I eliminated that folder because I was getting too many messages that I actually wanted in there.
Yeah.
And it's bad enough to have to check the spam folder. But if I have to check another folder, that's like just too much work.
No, I totally agree. In fact, I've never looked in that folder, not once. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll have to eliminate it.
But the fact that yours is so large, I mean, you're an inbox zero type of gal. And the fact that you have 65,000, it must bug you, huh? Are you going to go through that
65,000? No, because as soon as this is over, they will all be deleted.
Okay. But what if there's something important in there?
Well, clearly it hasn't been important enough for me to know about it. So I guess it's not that important, right? I don't know. I'll do a quick scan.
Yeah, 65,000. Yeah, right. Okay. Here's just some fun facts about spam. 54% of all email traffic is spam, and Russia is actually responsible for the vast majority of that at around 21%.
They send the most spam?
They send the most spam.
Okay.
Yeah. Incidentally, I actually have a special filter in my drip. If it comes from a .ru domain, I instantly don't add it to my email list.
Oh, for people to get on your email list.
Yeah, well, because chances are it's going to be also like a spammy email address also. It goes both ways also.
So you just are not going to let anybody in Russia learn about e-commerce?
Well, not with that email address. I checked. I've never had anyone from Russia sign up for the course.
Okay.
Like the full course. Anyway. So on average, 1 in 6 emails get flagged as spam or they are blocked entirely. So there's a spam folder, there's a promotions folder, and then certain ISPs like Yahoo, AOL, they like block the email altogether. So it doesn't even reach any inbox whatsoever. That's actually the worst.
Yeah.
So if you currently have low email open rates, I can't remember what the average is. I think I have a table here somewhere. It looks like it's around 20%, depending on what industry.
So 20% is the average open rate for emails.
Yeah, let's just say. I mean, it's different depending on the sector, but let's just call it 20%. So if you find yourself lower than these industry averages, you should listen to this episode. We're going to talk about some ways to improve that and then get out of the spam and promotions folder and get your stuff delivered.
So can we talk first about these spammy words? Because we were just talking about this before we started recording. I've been using that share through headline analyzer.
Yeah.
I'll drop the link in the show notes because I'm not sure what the URL is exactly, but I've been using that for our podcast titles and I've been using it to do email titles occasionally. I don't use it as much for that, but there are words that actually will hurt you in your email subject line.
Yes. I think it's just because there's so much spam out there, but stuff like winner, congratulations, great offer. This is not spam.
So one of the things that I think is interesting, one of these trigger words is actually the word free.
Yes. You know, what's funny is like, I try my best not to use that in the copy also.
Okay.
Just mainly because, you know, everyone's trying to give away free stuff and that just gets marked as spam. So I'll use things like at no cost to you or different ways to do that.
That feels like an infomercial, but I like it.
It does, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's already in the spam checkers. I mean, what I still do actually is if you have an autoresponder sequence that you know is just going to go out on a constant basis and you're not going to change it that much, Mm-hmm. I would recommend running all of those emails through a spam checker. Like I have my favorite one, which is Glock Apps. And this is a really cool tool in case you've never used it before. And I know you're going to use it on one of your clients' inbox soon. What it does is it has a whole bunch of different inboxes all over the world. And you put a special tag in the email and then you broadcast that email, like in your autoresponder sequence, for example, to all those emails that are owned by Glock Apps. And Glock Apps will tell you what your deliverability rate is.
Okay.
For all the major ISPs and everything. It will also analyze your email for all the words, trigger words here. I mean, the list is too long to list, obviously,
yeah,
in the podcast. But it'll go through all of them and tell you where you should make changes to your email to make sure that it gets delivered.
Yeah, because I feel like there's this weird balance between trying to get a very catchy subject line, but also not going over the edge with the spam factor, because other things that can hurt you are like exclamation points, using capital letters, which I actually love doing. I love punctuation. Like I will use all the punctuation, but I know that it's not the best idea. So I try to keep that to a minimum. It feels like there's this weird balance between trying to get noticed versus getting so noticed that you end up in spam.
I don't think you have to be super anal about it. Just
yeah,
as long as you don't sound like a sweepstakes or,
yeah,
I don't know, just, I think there's also a balance between how long the email is too. Like, I don't know exactly what the algorithm that Glock Apps uses, but mm-hmm, if you have an autoresponder sequence that's going to drive customers to you, it's just worth running that through Glock Apps.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'll run like a broadcast email on Glock Apps also. Like if it's a very important email that's going to go out, I'll run it through just to make sure.
Yeah.
And again, Glock Apps obviously doesn't know exactly how the ISPs work, but
right,
it can give you a pretty good idea.
Yeah, that's, I think if you're not trying that, you should probably give it a try, especially if you're sending a lot of emails out. I don't know. You send, how many emails do you send out a week? Just the one weekly email? Take out outside of your flows.
Outside of my flows. Yeah, right now it's just one a week for the blog. Sometimes two a week, depending on what I'm doing. What about you?
Usually just one a week.
Yeah.
But then if you get on the autoresponder, when you come in a certain way, you're going to get more emails. But I'm always hesitant. Like this client that I'm working with right now, she sends one email a week. And every time she sends an email, she makes money. So to me, and her open rates are decent, her spam rates are super low. So to me, it's like, hey, let's try sending two emails a week. Because if you make, let's just say $100 with one email a week, will you make $200 with two emails a week? Right? Or will it be $150? Like I don't know what the math is on that yet, because we haven't tried it. But
so I think the rules are different for e-commerce versus content.
Sure. But like she's e-commerce.
Yeah, she's e-commerce. So
yeah,
I mean, you can probably get away with sending three times a week.
But I feel like you've got to send content, because I don't want to just send sales stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to mix it up.
Yeah. Because I'm on Bumblebee's list, and I feel like I don't get a lot of emails from Bumblebee at all.
Maybe you haven't opened in a year or 6 months. I can't remember. I have different segments. So maybe you're just, I mean,
I'm in the bad group now.
You probably don't open them very often, right?
So here's the other thing. If I sign up on an email list of my friends, I always try to open the email.
Huh,
even if I don't
strange,
care what
then.
It says. But maybe I'm wondering maybe if it's in my promotions tab or something. I don't
it
know.
Could
I'll have
be.
To look.
It probably is in your promotions tab is what I'm guessing.
So I'll have to look.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do we got next?
All right. The next one is technical.
Okay. You should do it.
Okay. So
do a Tony version.
I'll try
do
to
a dumb
do a
it down.
Dumb down version of this.
Okay.
So three words, they're acronyms, SPF, DKIM, and DMARC. If it, you don't need to know what it is. Just ask about it, though. So just ask your email provider how to add those credentials to your server or wherever your website's hosted to authenticate your emails. Basically, these three things together prove to ISPs that you are the one sending it.
Okay, so let's back that up for people. So you're going to ask your email service provider,
right,
to add this where?
So you just ask them for what to add.
Okay.
So you ask them about SPF, DKIM, and DMARC.
Okay.
And they'll come back and they'll give you some lines that you need to add to your ISP. Like wherever
so
you
lines
host
of
your
code?
Domain. It's not code. It's just thingamabobbers.
Okay. So you get the thingamabobbers. And then for people like me, then who do I tell to do that?
You tell your like GoDaddy, wherever you're registered.
So
wherever
like,
your domain is registered.
So GoDaddy for most people.
GoDaddy. Basically what you're doing, you know, did you know that like anyone can send email as you? Like I could send out email as Tony, you know, at the Happy Housewife or whatever, right?
I don't understand that.
They can do that because anyone can do that, right? Unless you have these in place. Unless you have SPF, DKIM, and DMARC in place.
Okay.
This proves that it came from your domain.
Okay.
And your server. That's what the purpose of this is.
Yeah, I did. I actually just found this out within the past 2 months because someone that I think we both know, I can't remember who it was actually right now. It was in a Facebook group and someone was sending out emails as them.
Yep.
You know, so it like super spammy.
Yeah.
Which was the problem. The problem. It wasn't just like they were sending out good emails. It was they were sending out, you know, very spammy emails. So get that information from your internet service provider. Take it to your domain host, whatever we're going to call it.
Whether it be GoDaddy or wherever you happen to be on. And then add those lines in. And oftentimes you can just ask your whoever your web host is to help you do this.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say that's required. That's like par for the course today. Otherwise, you know, anyone can spoof you.
Yeah. Okay. The next one, which actually is something that you and I are both pretty, I hate to say passionate about, but is cleaning up your list so that you're not sending to people like me who don't open the Bumblebee Linen emails, right?
Yes.
But here's where I see people get stuck on this, is that I think sometimes people view email as sort of like page views. It's like a vanity metric, right? Like it feels good to say, oh, I've got 100K subscribers or, oh, I've got 10K subscribers, whatever it is, right? But if 2/3 of those people don't open an email from you, that's not helping you at all. It's hurting you. Not to mention the fact that you have to pay for those people who are not making you any money.
I was going to say that, like, vanity metrics aside, what hurts me more is the pocketbook.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the people that I'm working with right now has a pretty large list, but she is ruthless on taking these people off the list. In fact, I had to talk her out of doing something the other day because I kind of felt like, hey, if someone's opened their wallet to you in the last like 6 to 9 months, because she sells products that people would buy again, but probably in a year. I was like, let's not kick them off yet. I said, because I think they might have an opportunity to rebuy from you. Because the products last about a year. So like after a year and they don't buy, then that's fine. But if they've already bought once, I was like, hey, can we leave those people on for a little bit longer and just see what happens? But she kicks people off in like 3 months. She's done.
Three months.
I get, well, because she pay, I mean, she's on Klaviyo, which is very expensive. She's got a large list. So in her mind, if these people aren't buying, she doesn't want to pay for them, which I agree. But she kicks people off about every 3 months of inactivity.
I have a segment in my list is haven't opened in 6 months, but has purchased in the last year.
Yeah. So that's what I changed hers to as I did purchase in the last year.
Yeah. And for those people, I actually don't send them the weekly email. I'll send them like if there's like a good sale or something going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So
but,
you go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say both you and I, we have an automated way of doing this.
Yes.
In our ISPs. I mean, there's ways to do it probably no matter what ISP you're on. It's important to make it automated because it's a huge hassle to do it manually.
You and I both use a flow where we actually try to get people re-engaged. So I think my flow is 4 emails. I think yours is as well because I think I copied yours, actually.
I was about to say, mine is 4 emails.
Wow. Yeah, I think, I copied part of it. Okay. But it's funny because, so the flow goes out as soon as people hit that threshold of like haven't opened the last 12 emails because I email once a week. So that's basically 3 months. If you haven't opened anything for me in 3 months, then you get put into the flow. So I don't automatically just kick you off. But the flow for me, the subject lines are a little more clickbaity. I kind of hit people a little bit harder there. So it, you know, like, and then I also just give them the freedom to unsubscribe. So I even tell people like, hey, if you're not interested anymore, I don't have any hard feelings. You know, I can't manage my inbox either kind of thing. So because to me, it's like I actually want people to want to get off the list if they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And it's funny, though, because I don't know what happened in the past maybe 6 weeks or so, but I'm getting at least one reply a day from that sequence from somebody, which is weird because I rarely do because I don't really ask for people to reply to me. I more ask for them to just, you know, hey, let me know if you want to unsubscribe. And of course, there's always like every like 6 months I get the, I don't even know who you are. Take me off your list. You know, you get some like, did you need to even email me? Just unsubscribe. You don't have to be mean today. But I've been getting in the past like 6 weeks about an email a day saying, oh yeah, I love your emails. Keep me on. And you're like, well, you haven't opened the last 12. How do you know you love them?
I was going to say, do you hit reply and go, well, where have you been for the last 6 months?
Huh? I screenshot their unopens and no.
Yeah, right.
But so anyway, I don't know what's happened recently that I'm starting to get those emails, but it's pretty funny. But that's what I, and then once they go through that and they don't open any of those, then they're done.
Yeah, I have sequence also too, but I encourage people to hit reply actually. I think there's one email, the sequence that says, hey, I'm going to read this email and I will promise you I reply. Just ask me any question where you're stuck and I'll help.
Yeah. I don't want people emailing me all their questions about life, being stuck in life.
But the thing is, I don't get a lot of replies. So yeah. Like you, I don't get a lot.
Because like, I think we've talked about this before. When I started blogging, people would email me questions like, should I buy a trampoline? You know, and in my mind, I envisioned them fighting with their spouse about a trampoline. And so I was like the decision maker. And I was like, I don't want to be these. Plus, I can't tell somebody to buy a trampoline, like the liability there. Their kid breaks their arm and then it's my fault because I said, get the trampoline. So that's the kind of questions I get. And I don't want to answer those. So I mean, you can tell people about freight forwarders. That's fine all day long.
You should say, well, your husband emailed me, too. And he told me that.
That's right. Okay, so what's the next one?
All right, so the next one, the secret to deliverability really is to just email the people who actually want to get your emails. And so these are your most engaged segments. So we were just talking about upping the email send frequency, right, for your client. You can certainly do that for the people who open all the time, right?
Yeah.
There's probably little worry there.
Yeah.
I guess what would be a little bit more worrisome is if you start emailing more often to the people who haven't opened that much.
Right. So you actually had a strategy about combining, because we've also talked about doing things in segments. So like for me, I email my most engaged people first.
Yep.
And then about 2 hours later, the same exact email goes out to the next group of people who are engaged, but not, I mean, the first group of people opens every single email. The next group is not quite engaged. And then there's like the losers at the end. But you actually combine groups, right?
The only reason I combine groups is because it looks really bad if you do a broadcast, like to one of those less engaged groups, for example, and nobody opens it.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's a signal to the ISP that no one wants this email.
Yeah.
Crickets. So, yeah, if you feel like one of those, you know, groups that you're sending out is going to have like a 5% open rate, I would consider combining it with, ironically, combining it with a higher engagement rate so that at least it comes out above average.
Yeah. And then you also talk about emailing your best subscribers more often. So you would just not email the other people at all?
Well, you mentioned going up to like two or three a week, right?
Yeah.
So I probably wouldn't go up to three a week for the people who aren't opening, right? Mainly just the best customers. Those are probably the ones that are buying anyway, right?
Well, it's actually interesting. So an email went out this week and we used a different segment of people. So instead of using the weekly email goes out to everybody. But in this email, we actually did a test where the email went to people who were like more engaged. They weren't like the highest engaged, but it was probably like 70% of the total list. And Klaviyo actually made that determination of who like these people were, probably based on a bunch of different data points, right? And so the email obviously performed better with open rates and click-through rates, but it didn't make as much money.
Oh, huh. Interesting.
So now, obviously, I like to wait about a week because people are slow to open email and, you know, make purchasing decisions and things like that. But it'll be interesting to see at the end of the week if how it performed based on the week before or a couple weeks before.
So since we're talking about Klaviyo, I mean, they have like a lifetime value metric too. So
yes.
Like I have a segment just for like my best customers from a dollar perspective. They might not necessarily open everything, but they spend the most. So yeah, maybe that's what you're experiencing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Another thing that we, I don't know if we've talked about this, but sending your emails at a certain day or time.
Yeah. I mean, after a while, if you've been doing this a while, like people will expect an email from you.
Yeah.
And so if you maintain like the same schedule, people will like look forward to your email.
But how did you come? Because you email people on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays at 6:30. How did I come up with that? I think a tool told me that once, and then I never changed it again. How did you do yours?
So I want to switch mine. That's why I asked, because I email people on Wednesdays typically.
Okay.
But I actually think Sundays is a better day for my audience to email, because I feel like Sunday afternoon people are like, they're kind of getting ready for their week. If they have, you know, most of them have kids, they're like doing like meal prep or getting lunch, like lunchbox stuff ready for the school week, things like that. And I feel like they're more likely to be like sitting on their computer, maybe looking for recipes, things like that. So they're more likely to check their email at that time. But I can't get my crap together enough to like to me, Wednesday seems easy because then I just work on it on Tuesday, right?
Right. Whereas you usually take the weekends off.
Yeah. Like I usually work Sundays, but I don't want to work Saturdays, right? I don't want Saturday to have this like in the back of my head going, oh, I need to like get this email together.
Wait, I have an idea.
Okay.
Why don't you work on Tuesday for the Sunday broadcast?
That's the point, is I can't seem to get it together enough to like, because it's like, oh, it's Tuesday. I have till Sunday.
So I have your same issue probably. So what I do is like all the autoresponder emails, I actually have go out on the weekend.
Okay.
And then I do the broadcast during the week. That way, at least they're staggered. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. Sometimes those Sunday emails do better.
Yeah.
And I notice a lot of the course sales that I get that are one-offs and randoms occur on the weekend. Probably because of that email. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's something that you should probably test if you're just getting started, or if you're not happy with your open rates or your click-through rates, is just try.
Yeah, what'll happen is like a lot of tools, email marketing tools, will analyze your open rates if you've been sending for a while, and they'll tell you like when most people open them. And then you can just pick. Like, it's about timing, actually. I know for me, like I check during certain times of the day, and if you're not at the top and you're buried, I might not even ever see it in my entire life, right?
Especially for you.
If it makes it to the next page on Gmail, like I might never see it.
So. Yeah. I think too, the nice thing about using probably any email service provider is that you can always set it so it doesn't send on a certain day or time too. Like, it's like, I know you talked about your flows and your automated stuff. So if, you know, you never want an email to go out on a Saturday because you feel like no one will open that, then you can always set things not to send at certain days and times as well.
Yep. Yeah. So the next thing that works really well is to just get people to reply to you. I've actually changed things up a little bit, and I'm probably going to change things up even more once like the next Apple iOS comes out, where I'm just going to literally tell them to hit reply or click on any link in order to get the rest of the tutorial. Like, I gave out a tutorial.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably say it multiple times in the email too, because that's important. It's like telling a signal directly to the ISP that you actually want the email.
Now, will you still send it if they don't do that?
I will, but
okay.
Like if they really, so there's actually some people who sign up for my free 6-day mini course. They're like fanatics about it. Like, I didn't get lesson 3.
Yes.
But then, you know, they literally email me after they got lesson 2, and it's staggered, right? A day.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of those people are going to be willing to do anything. I think it's important to just hammer it in someone's head.
Yeah.
Like oftentimes people don't read the emails thoroughly. So that's why you have to write that in multiple times, I feel. Anything, like kind of like how you deal with me, Tony, right? You got to like beat
just
into my head.
Just badger you.
Times. Yeah.
Badger you. So I was thinking, because when people sign up on my email list, there's not a course or a free mini course or anything like that that I'm giving out typically. Like sometimes it's a challenge, right? So I could easily say that, like, if you want to get day 2 of the challenge, hit reply or click. But sometimes it's just like they got a free printable or they just signed up randomly.
But the free printable in itself is an action, right?
But it, like, if they get the next email, there's nothing for them to do, right?
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think one of the ways that I actually get a lot of people to reply to my emails is if you can, and we've talked about this a lot, is put in that like personal story. So tell a story about yourself, how you got started. I know you talk a lot about how you got started selling hankies because your wife wanted to, you know, quit her corporate job. And so I think whenever you can personalize something, someone replied to this email 2 days ago, which made me think of it, is that I talked about, hey, this is how I became the Happy Housewife. This is how I started the blog. And I tell a couple funny stories about like how I was just like horrific. I was a horrific housewife, right? And then at the end, I'm like, hey, I want to hear your story. Like, tell me how you got here, you know, because it's like, hey, we're swapping stories almost. And so if you can do something like that, I think that's effective too in getting people to reply, because everyone wants to tell their story. Everyone wants to talk about themselves. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, people just want to have a conversation. So if you don't have anything specific like, hey, hit reply to get the next tutorial, you can always personalize it and get people just to be personal with you.
So when you say personalize, are you implying that you put like their first name in the email also?
I don't put up their first name in every email, but some, because I don't ask for people's first names.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
Yeah. No, like personalize in that, like, I'm just asking for a response from them because I'm saying something. It's kind of like, hey, I'm going to tell you something about me. Now you tell me something about you.
You know, that works really well when executed properly. Like if you tell a really funny story, that works really well. I've had mixed results with that because sometimes I guess my stories are boring.
Is it another, is it another vacuum joke? Is that what it is?
Yeah, right.
No, I tell a story about how I broke the VCR while ironing back when I was like 20 years old.
So, yeah. Did you iron the VCR by accident or something?
So I had like zero domestic skills. Like, I mean, we could argue that I might still have zero domestic skills. But so I was ironing and I don't think I'd ever ironed before. And it didn't occur to me that you probably shouldn't just put the iron down on the piece of clothing when you were like, you know, figuring something else out. So we only had like two plugs in the living room. And so there was the plug by the TV and then there was a plug on the other side of the room. So I just plugged in the iron in like the where the surge protector thing was, right? So like plugged in there was like the VCR, the TV, the iron, and probably something else. And so I'm ironing and I'm probably watching something on TV. I don't remember. And I put the iron down on the pants and I got distracted. And then I realized that like, oh, that's probably a really bad idea to like have the iron sitting there. And I like spun around and in the process, I hit the other side of the ironing board. So the iron like flew up in the air and I really wish that we would have had like a ring camera. The iron flew up in the air and came down on the cord of the VCR that was like going from the VCR, which was sitting on top of the TV, to the wall and melted through the cord, but also the weight of the iron pulled the VCR off the top of the TV. And so not only did I burn through the cord, but I crashed the VCR on the floor. And yeah.
So, you know what I just realized when you were telling that story?
What?
Some people listening might not even know what a VCR is. That just
occurred. Oh, yes. Well, I don't like, it's how you watched movies. I don't really know how else you... Back in the day, we had super VHS tapes too. We were big time. So anyway, but I tell that story and I think they're like my audience. There's a lot of people that probably can relate to that. Like they don't know how to do a lot of things that kind of they think they should know how to do. So that always gets replies because I think people either one, they feel really sorry for me, or two, they feel like they have like someone who they can relate to now.
Yeah. Okay. So back on to email deliverability.
Yes. Sorry.
One thing that I do, but I don't really have any data whether this works or not, to be honest with you. This is just tell people to whitelist your emails or literally just drag from the promotions folder to the primary inbox. I tell people to do that like as soon as they sign up. Like there's this page sometimes that tells them. I'm not sure if that works, but I can imagine that if they actually follow your directions, it works. Do you do that at all?
I don't at all.
Okay. I wish I had data. I wish there was a way to measure this. But if you can get them to do that, then from now on, all of your emails are going to get delivered.
Yeah, I feel like my audience probably would not know how to do that.
Would not know. I mean, you give directions. Like, I can show you an example. Yeah. Like, it literally says, step one, go here, find the email, drag it over to the main inbox. Or problem is like, if you want them to whitelist, there's like a bunch of directions, and I'm not sure.
Yeah. That probably would not work for me. But I can see it working for people who have a more sophisticated audience.
The next thing is like really easy. It's just to use your real name as the sender.
So Steve at
like, have you ever gotten emails from like support at like thehappyhousewife.com or something impersonal like that?
Yes.
I mean, I don't actually check anyone's email unless there's like a name on there.
Okay.
Are you like that too?
No, I read more emails than you do. So, but I can see how that works. I don't love it when I see something from contact or support or shop or sale or anything like that.
Or info.
Yeah, I like seeing someone's name. So I send everything from Tony at The Happy Housewife.
Yeah. I mean, this is just low-hanging fruit. I mean, if you're using... I know sometimes people want to stay anonymous. So that's why you hide behind like an info address. But people are just... I mean, they want to talk to you, especially with content. They want to know.
Yeah. But also, I mean, I know people want to, I know there's people that want to stay anonymous, but you can stay anonymous and just say, you know, Brian at my wife quit her job or Bob at my wife quit her job. You don't have to use Steve.
That's true. I would probably,
I mean, just
slip
use
up,
a
though.
Name.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if you want to stay anonymous, just pick a name. So like we do that with customer service for my jewelry, is that we just picked a gender neutral name. And so anybody who responds to customer service uses that name. So the email is Jordan at the Oil Collection. They were signed at Jordan. So like that way people don't really know if it's a male or female. And then also anyone responding, it kind of takes on a consistency, because it's like, I don't like when I've had to deal with support for things and I'm talking to Karen 1 minute and then I'm talking to Susan the next minute and then I'm talking to, you know, Bob the next minute, because I feel like they don't know my problem. Right. So I just like to use the same name for consistency.
What if they call you? You don't have phone hours, right?
I don't have phone hours. Oh, okay. No. Okay. Yeah.
Oftentimes people will call us up at Bumblebee and say, hey, I'd like to speak with such and such.
Yeah. I always like when, because sometimes I run the customer service, I always like when I get a complaint about myself. Like if I don't, I mean, I try to make everybody happy, but sometimes customers are just really annoying and you're like, listen, nothing I'm going to do is going to make you happy, so I'm not going to lose money over this anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to be firm, but then they email back and are like, I want to talk to the manager or whatever. And you're like, oh, that's me too. Hey, how you doing? And so they complain about your, like, I've had people complain about me to me. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So anyway.
You just blame it on Jordan.
I do. I'm like, well, we're terminating them immediately. They're fired. So anyway, but yeah, that's what we do, is we just use a generic name. But for my happy housewife, I use my name.
Yeah. Let's see, anything we got left on the list here? There's some obvious ones, like don't purchase a list.
I don't know if that's obvious, because we get that question a lot.
Do we really?
Yes, we do. Not a lot, but we've had that question. So we get it on our webinars.
Yes, actually, you know, it's just really tempting.
Yeah. I don't think it is at all, but...
You don't think it's tempting?
What do you think? What do you think is tempting? Like, why do you think people think it's... Because it's just quick... They think it's a quick
it's
win.
It's like a get-rich-quick type of thing, right? Like, yeah. I can get you 100,000 emails for, like, $20. And you think to yourself, okay, well, if just, like, 0.5% of those people buy, I mean, that's not bad.
No, but what do you do with the other 99.5%?
Yeah, I mean, you call them, right?
Yeah. So what do you do if you've already done this? Like, say you've made the mistake, you purchased a list. Would you just disregard the whole thing?
I would just, yeah, I would not dare say, like, most ISPs will just ban you. Like, if you send out to that list and your spam rate is really high, like, you could just lose your account instantly.
Yeah.
So it's just not worth doing.
Yeah, just don't do it.
I mean, if you want to be extra careful, you'd set up like a side email, like send solution and try it, I guess. Like if I were to go that route, but just don't do that. Just don't do it. You'll get banned.
Okay. Can we talk about, I have like two more things I want to talk about
real
quick.
Yep.
One is my personal pet peeve. And this is when you make it difficult to unsubscribe.
Yes. I hate that.
I don't get angry very often. But this is something that I will mark your email as spam. If there's more than like three, like probably two clicks to unsubscribe, like if I have to look for the, like, I think everybody sort of knows that if you scroll to the bottom of the email, there should be an unsubscribe button at the bottom or a link, obvious link to unsubscribe. So when I scroll to the bottom and I cannot find that, I'm immediately irritated. And then if I look around a little bit more and then I find it and then it takes me to a page where it wants me to answer some questions before it lets me unsubscribe or makes me choose like 15 different options. Have you ever gotten that one where it's like...
The worst one is please enter the email that you would like to unsubscribe.
Yes. And then you have to go back and figure out which email you use to subscribe.
I just mark spam immediately, actually.
Yeah. But yeah, that drives me nuts. And I feel like if you're doing that, you're going to have people like us that will just mark you as spam. And it's not worth that, like, the hassle. You're going to get more spam than you are people that stay on your list because you're annoying. Do you want people to stay on your list because you're so annoying? No.
Yeah. I mean, getting marked by spam as spam is actually pretty major also.
Yeah.
Incidentally, this is just kind of a side since you brought it up earlier. Like AOL, Yahoo, and Microsoft email addresses are the worst. I think AOL is probably the worst. I think like the UI is such that the spam button is actually right near all the other buttons. So people actually accidentally hit spam all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. This is just AOL. Of course, I haven't used AOL in ages. But yeah. So those, and they actually have really dumb spam filters too. AOL, okay. Yahoo, and MSN. So like if you find that you have a whole chunk of emails that aren't getting delivered, I'm willing to bet that a lot of those are going to be AOL and Yahoo and Microsoft.
Well, and I know for us, so like a good example for us is Seller Summit, because everybody on that email list really wants to be on there because we're giving them conference information. So that's a pretty active list. Our open rates are very high because if we send an email out to someone who has a ticket, they're going to open it because it has information that's important. And so it never fails if we get someone emailing us and saying they did not receive an email or they didn't get it. They're always a Hotmail user. Always.
Yep.
It just, it's like I can almost bet before I even check. I'm like, oh, they're Hotmail. I'm sure of it.
I mean, those email addresses are like the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
Like I have course people who sign up and they can't get like the course emails because they're on. Sometimes they can't even get their login.
And then that drives me crazy too, because when you go through, like we use Drip for all this. And so we can go through and we can see that they've opened and clicked on like 10 emails and then all of a sudden it's undeliverable, like out of the blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so really quick, the last thing I want to talk about is just email service providers, because I know we've talked a little bit about that and we have our favorites. So I think both of us would say Klaviyo if you're running e-commerce.
Yep.
They're by far the best. And then you and I both use Drip for our website, our blogs.
Yes.
Our content site. Although we also, so you and I both signed up for Drip before Drip tried to move, or not tried to, they did move into the e-commerce world. So when we signed up for them, they were significantly cheaper.
They were like half the price when we signed
up. So neither of us are willing to switch back to anything, but you know, if you're just getting started, ConvertKit's a pretty solid option if you're doing a content site. Not e-commerce, but just straight up content.
Yeah, I mean, if you asked us like maybe 3-4 years ago, we would have recommended Drip without in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But once they doubled the price, now I think ConvertKit's probably the best bang for the buck for content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any other sleepers that you like?
Yeah, I just had one that I just want to touch on. I mean, bottom line, like your deliverability kind of depends on whether people want to read your emails.
Yeah.
And so I know what I prefer, and it really just depends on your audience. But for my wife quit her job, text emails work better than HTML ones. And I think the reason
mine
for that,
too.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is text is just like an email from a friend, right? If you start making it like fancy with pictures and borders and all that stuff, it just makes it a lot less personal.
Yeah. I actually took that idea from you because I used to have like really insane templates for my site back in the day. I mean, I paid someone to create templates and they were pretty. But then you were talking to me once and you said something about how text emails, and I actually think we heard it at an event too. And we had a conversation about it. And I, like the next week I switched, and those have always performed better. Even though I think they're ugly, they do better.
I don't care about how my email looks when I get it. I just, the ones I like the best are the ones that seem personal. Like there's certain emails that I get from certain people. Like I can't think of an example right off the top of my head, but they'll use my name and it always takes me like 2 seconds to realize that it's a mass email.
Yes. Yep.
And for those, they've been written so well and they work for me. I usually just read those to completion actually when that happens.
So I would say my advice to you guys would be, if your open rates are under 20%, I would take a look at some of these things that we mentioned in this episode and maybe make some changes to see if you can push that open rate past 20%. I know for me, my open rates can hit 30 and 40%, but it didn't get there until I made some changes, especially in when I email people and who I email and culling that list. And those things actually made a huge difference for me in my email. So if your email open rates aren't where you want them to be, I would make a couple changes and see if you can boost them.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.